So I'll start off with this. I'm going to assume nobody in the room has read this book. I haven't read it either, but I came across it this week. It's a book called Star Maker by a guy by the name of Olaf Stapledon. In 1937. Anybody heard of this book? That's what I kind of figured. But in the story, this guy is on this quest, and it ends when the main character realizes that the God, the deity that he searched for, isn't anything like he ever imagined. And it's not that this God is evil that he finds. It's just that this God is, well, disinterested. Doesn't care about humanity. And so what he's done is he's like completed his grand project, and then he just kind of stands back and observes his creation like an artist would look at one of his own paintings. And so here's how I would say it. It's kind of like he's just a cosmic Bob Ross, you know, who just painted his happy little world, and then he just stepped away from it and just watched it, not really caring what happened in that world. And I don't know, maybe online in the room, maybe there's somebody in the room today that this is kind of how you feel about the God of the Bible, the God of this universe, that in times of intense suffering, have you ever wondered, does God actually care? Does he actually see you in your pain? Or is he just this artist that painted everything together and then has just stepped back and is letting everything play out? Well, as we wrap up our series, To My Friend Who Left the Faith, inspired by a book by a guy by the name of Wade Bearden. Interesting book. It's a series of letters that he's written to a childhood friend that he grew up going to church with who eventually left the faith. In this series, we've been working through just different ideas, and we've been talking about doubt and faith and how it all works together. And today, we are going to deal with the very intense and very real subject and topic of pain and suffering. Because there are many people who have trouble accepting Christianity because there's this struggle to reconcile a good God with a bad world. Because at times it can be tempting to think that this God that we worship is this aloof and distant God, just standing off to the side while everything just spins out of control. I mean, how do you believe in a God who doesn't seem to care? You ever ask yourself this question, if God is so good, then why? You ever wondered about this and just kind of thought through this question? If God is so good, then why? I mean, why is there so much violence and evil in the world? I mean, why do innocents get caught in the crossfire? You ever wonder, it's like, why are these just like horrible diseases out there? Alzheimer's, MS, birth defects, heart attacks, all these things going on. Why is there so much hate and prejudice and racism? Why are there natural disasters like tornadoes and earthquakes and tsunamis? Why are there car crashes? Why are there accidents? Why is there so much going on in the world that just seems so bad? I mean, if God is so good, then why? And then you just kind of like start to bring it into your own little personal address. And you're like, man, if God is so good, then why? Why did I have to go through that divorce? I mean, I didn't want it. I mean, they cheated on me. You know, they left me. They left me in pain. You know, it's like, why am I still so alone? The only thing I want is just for a handful of friends, you know, and I pray and I pray and I pray that God would just send people into my life, and yet I'm lonely. It's like, why do I have to watch my kids just make terrible choices and then watch them suffer the consequences? I mean, why is it that I want to do what Dave Ramsey says, you know, and get out of debt and go through the baby steps, and every single time I do it, my car breaks down or I get a hospital bill? You ever wondered why sometimes whenever we're praying for God to help and we're asking him to do something about the pain and it seems like nothing is happening? And so you ask this question, it's like, if God can do something, then why won't he do something, you know? Why won't he do anything about this? I mean, it's an old, old, old question. It's been around for forever. I mean, there's a philosopher in Greece back in 5 BC. He was named Diagoras. He is known as Greece's most famous atheist, all right? And so he talked about how the gods don't exist and all these things. And he was in an argument, a debate with these people, and they showed him a display of pictures. They're like, well, here, you can see the gods at work. I mean, they said, you think that the gods have no care for man? Look at all the pictures of those who escape storms by praying to the gods for escape. To which he replied, oh, yeah, I see that. But where are the pictures of all those who suffered shipwreck and perished in the waves? What do we do with this issue? How do we deal with pain and suffering? I mean, all religions offer an answer. Islam will tell you it's just you're getting what you deserve. It is punishment from God, and so that's why you are experiencing bad things. Hinduism will tell you it's because of bad karma. You're paying for the previous price for your previous life. Buddhism is going to tell you that suffering and joy, well, those are really just an illusion. And true enlightenment includes the awareness that the self doesn't exist. And once you have no self, there is no reason to avoid pain. Having no self is really good at tax time as well. But anyway... The Christian perspective, though, is different. We see this differently. And one of the reasons why I love the Bible is because the Bible is just raw, man. I mean, this collection of books is not just like a bunch of fairy tales. Everybody's happy, lives happily ever after. You know, they never struggle with doubt. They just have this easy life. No. It is raw, and it allows for emotion and doubts of the people of God. I mean, you start reading through it, and you come across a guy by the name of Jeremiah, who's a young prophet, preacher-type guy, and he's called to minister to a group of people, and God tells him, he's like, hey, here's the deal. You're going to go out there. You're going to preach. You're going to minister to these folks, and they are not going to listen to you, and they are going to hate you, all right? And so he goes out, he preaches, and they don't listen to him, and they hate him. And so he ends up writing like an uplifting book called Lamentations, where he's just like lamenting over how bad things are. The prophet Elijah is later, he's on a run for his life, and he's trying to escape some people trying to kill him, and he ends up staying with this widow and her son. And while he's living in this widow's house, the son dies, and Elijah is just like, he's distraught, and he looks at this dead boy, and he prays this to God. He's like, Lord, my God, have you brought tragedy even on this widow I'm staying with, causing her son to die? David is known as a man after God's own heart, and he goes through such turmoil and pain that time and time again you'll hear him praying things like, you know, God, why have you forsaken me? God, why have you forgotten me? God, where are you now? John the Baptist, cousin of Jesus, the one who announces that Jesus is who Jesus is sitting in prison waiting for execution. And nothing's happening to the point where he calls his friends together and goes, hey, will you go talk to Jesus? And will you go to him and will you say, hey, you really the one? And if you are, do you think you could do something about this? It's a question that we've wrestled with for eons of time. God, are you just this cold and heartless, distant God? Do you even care about how much we're suffering down here? And so that's what I want us to talk about in the rest of our time this morning. And I'll be up front with you right now. I know this is deeply raw. This is deeply personal for many of us watching online in the room. And I'm going to just be up front with you right here. There is no way on this earth that I can answer every single question about pain and suffering here. You know, but what I'm going to do in our time is just say, I want to give you three truths about pain and suffering today and how we can see God relates to our pain. So if you're taking notes and you're following along, here's the first truth today. It's this, is that God can use your pain. He can use your pain. Out to the side, you can write this. Our pain can have a purpose. I mean, you know this. There are things in life that just tend to happen sometimes. I mean, we get sick, or there's a divorce, or there's a death in the family, financial problems, marriage problems, broken friendships, broken relationships. You're not appreciated at work. Rumors are being spread about you at work or at school, and we face difficulty and hardship and anxiety. And there's a lot of times whenever we just look at life and we go, this is not the way I would have scripted things to go. This is not how I hoped life would be. In 1 Peter 1, Peter, who's one of Jesus' best friends, he's writing to a group of Christians, and he talks to them about this idea of pain and difficulty and hardship. And listen to what he says here in verses 6 and 7 of chapter 1. He says, in all this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that the proven genuineness of your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. See, of all the words that Peter could have used to describe what God is doing now, he chooses these three words. And you can underline them there. Grief, trials, and tests. The word proven, you could translate it better, tests. So grief, trials, and tests. Now, here's the deal. None of us, there's not a single person in this room who would have said, that's how I want to describe my life. There is nobody here today who woke up and prayed, God, if you love me, would you send some suffering my way today? Nobody prays that. In fact, we do the opposite. We see suffering as a sign of God's unfaithfulness. But that's not what Peter does. He sees difficulties not as something in the way of God's plan, but he sees them as a part of God's plan for our lives. And this is just the way it goes. Our pain can have a purpose. And we see this because we know this. We experience this in other areas of our life. I mean, pain can prepare us for what's coming next. I mean, those of you who are ex-athletes in the room, or you're not ready to admit that yet, all the athletes in the room, all right? You think back to whenever you were in high school or college and you were getting ready for the season, and what did you do? You did two-a-days, you did three-a-days, you ran sprints, you did all the things, you lifted the weights, and it hurt, didn't it? It was painful, and your lungs were on fire, your muscles were aching, you didn't know how you were going to make it through it, but yet it had a purpose. It was preparing you for what's come next. My high school coach said this. I will never forget this. He always told us before the beginning of every single season. He goes, listen, man, I'll tell you this. You can either have easy games and hard practices, or you can have hard practices and easy games. Which one do you want? And that's what the pain does. It prepares us for what's coming next. Pain can actually shape us into who we need to become. I love Romans 5. It talks about how suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. But it all begins with our suffering. It ends up proving our faith. Or as Peter says, it ends up testing our faith. How well we endure. It's a faith that is refined by fire. That's the word picture that Peter is using there. He's talking about how you would take raw gold and run it through the fire and refine it to make it pure and pure. And he says, that's what suffering does for your faith. It refines your faith. It gets rid of all the things that aren't necessary and just gets it down to what is pure. I've heard it said that a faith that can't be tested is a faith that can't be trusted. That God isn't so much working to transform our circumstances as he is working through our circumstances to transform us. And that he doesn't cause our pain, but he can use our pain. And many of you have seen this in your own life, haven't you? And you went through a painful ordeal. I mean, you just think about it. I mean, it was an addiction. It was a relationship. It was a loss of job. And it was hurtful and it crippled you. But sometime later, and it's always sometime later, and we don't know how long later is going to be, but it's always sometime later, you came through on the other side and you saw how God used your pain to grow you, didn't you? Or you saw how God used your pain to help you minister to somebody else. I love 1 Corinthians chapter 1, 4. It says that the God of all comfort comforts us in our troubles so that we can help others in their troubles. He uses our pain. It can have a purpose. And sometimes it's helping others. Sometimes it's just you came out of it a better person, didn't you? And as you look back over that, and you look back over that season of your life, you're like, man, I came out of it with a stronger faith. And doggone it, I wouldn't go through it again if I didn't have to, but I am kind of glad I went through it. Because I'm better now. God used my pain. Here's the second truth. God is with you in your pain. He's with you in your pain. He is present. He is there with you. He hasn't left you in your pain. Psalm 46 verse 1 says, God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. Here's the truth. God can be found when you need him. And it's important because most of the time we take pain and suffering as a sign of God's absence, not his presence. But that's not the case. He is very present with us in our pain. I love how the Apostle Paul phrases this in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. It's a crazy scene. He's talking about he's got this thorn in the flesh and nobody knows what it is. It could be blindness, could be illness, could be a person, because I found that there are some people who have the spiritual gift of thorn in the flesh and they love to use it. And so, you know, but he's like, God, I'm pleading. You got to get rid of this. And he says, so three times I pleaded with the Lord, take it away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So therefore, this is what Paul says, so therefore I will boast, I will brag, I will be all the more glad about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. See, it was his pain that led him to trust God deeper, to more fully lean into what God was doing in his life, to more fully lean into God's power and not into Paul's own personal power, to step out of his power and into the Lord's power. And so it gets to the place where Paul's like, I'm going to brag about it, man. It's like, are you weak? Oh, you betcha, man. I am weak. I am in hurt. I'm in pain. And it's just the way it is. But I'm going to boast about it because it's through my weakness, not my strength, that I found him. That's where I experience grace. I mean, it sounds insane, doesn't it? To be bragging about the pain, to be bragging about weakness, to be bragging about the hardships that we go on. But he looks back at that thorn and he says, man, that was a blessing. Paul is basically like, hey, don't do this. Don't curse the blessing. The pain could be a blessing in your life because through it, he found grace. So I wonder, can we ever get to the place where it's like, you know what? I'm going to boast about my illness. I'm going to boast about my illness because through my illness, that's how I've been drawn closer to Christ. You know what? I'm going to boast in my struggle to not find a job because in it, I've learned that he is my provider. I'm going to boast about my wayward child because through this season, I've learned how much the Father loves me. I'm going to boast in my loneliness because through that, I've learned that my God is always with me. Because where we are at our weakest is where we will find him. We want God to give us what we want. He wants to give us himself. He wants to show us that he's all we need. So God can use your pain. He will be with you in your pain. And here's the last truth. God can be trusted. He can be trusted with your pain. He can be trusted in your pain. Now why? Why are we able to say in the midst of the pain, in the midst of all of the hurt, why are we able to say, God, I don't understand what's happening right now, but I trust you? I mean, here's the deal. No other religion has what we have. I hope you understand just how unique Christianity is. There is all kinds of wisdom in other religions of the world, but ours is the only one in which you have a God who suffers. Our God suffered for us. Jesus Christ, God in a body, God in the flesh. Whenever we start to talk about the doctrine of the incarnation and about how Jesus left heaven to come down to earth, it is more than just a neat academic idea. This matters. I mean, if you think about the implications of it, I mean, he leaves all the luxuries of heaven, whatever that must feel like. He took on all the pain and toil of being a mortal human being. He experienced, I mean, have you ever thought about this? All the lows of adolescence. Can you remember all the lows of adolescence? He experienced them all. He experienced disease and sickness. He had the stomach flu. He experienced first century dentistry. I mean, you know, he's the one that knows what it feels like to be alone, to be rejected, to lose loved ones. He became flesh, vulnerable whenever he knew all authority. He was born naked and placed in a feeding trough, then later died naked after being nailed to a cross. Theologian Andy Crouch, this is how he says it. Says he, Jesus died exposed to the possibility of loss, not just of human life, but of his very identity as the divine Son with whom the Father was well pleased. I love Hebrews chapter 2, verse 9. That says, but we do see Jesus who was made lower than the angels for a little while. Now crowned with glory and honor because he suffered death so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. Friends, I hope you're hearing what I'm saying. Jesus Christ experienced pain in every way you could imagine. Physical pain, he knew it. Emotional pain, he knew it. Spiritual pain, he knew it. And that's why whenever you go to him, whenever I go to him, and I say to him, or you say to him, God, I'm in pain. It hurts so bad. Our God is the only God that can say, I know. I know what you mean. No other religion offers this. Jesus is the only one. And a God who suffered is a God who can be trusted. He can use your pain. He is with you in your pain. And he can be trusted in your pain. It's probably about 19 years ago. Our oldest was probably about 2 years old. We hadn't moved out here just yet. And so our son, he had this like little police kind of car, four-wheeler kind of thing that he sat on top of with the handlebars up here. And he just loved to just sprint back and forth through the house on those four little wheels. You know, just as fast as those little short little legs could go, man. And he just loved doing that. And there was one day that he was doing this and just kind of lost balance real quick and tipped over and he hit his head on the wall. But it wasn't just the wall. It just happened to be like the corner of a wall, you know. And so just that sharp, sharp, you know, corner. And so it split his head open in the back and it was a mess, man. I mean, just, you guys know head wounds, they bleed a lot. And so it's just pouring out and all these things. I mean, it wasn't like a huge gash, but you know, we were talking about something about like that or so. And so we get there, we're trying to calm him down, We can't get him consoled. We don't know what to do. We're just dumb kids, you know, at this point. You know, we're just like, oh no, what do we do? Should we go to the doctor? I don't know. Cause I'm like, well, doctors are expensive, you know, and it's like, we could probably just like glue it together, you know, I mean, should be fine. And, you know, it's like, it's starting to mat up and all these things. And so, we didn't know what to do. So I did the only thing I know to do is I called my mom, you know, and I was like, Mom, you gotta come over, you know, I don't know what's going on. And so she comes over and she starts looking at it. And, she's like, Adam, he really needs to go to urgent care, go to the ER. I was like, really? You know, I mean, he's not crying now, you know? And she's like, yeah, that's a pretty deep cut. You know, you're going to want to get that looked after. It's like, okay. So we load up and we take him over to the urgent care and we get there and he's fine. He's not crying. And then we hand him off to like this mean nurse and she looks at it. She like grabs this like sponge thing and like just starts scrubbing on it real bad. And he starts bawling and crying. It's like, you broke it. You know, it's like he was fine. Everything was good. And so he's just beside himself. You know, it hurts. He's in pain and you have these strange people around him, like, you know, scrubbing on his head. And so the doctor at the time just kind of looked at us and said, okay, so this is going to have to be closed up. And they're like, but he is in no mood at all for us to do stitches. He's not going to let a needle near him. And so we're just going to have to, like, staple it shut. And I was like with what I use at my office, you know? It's like, I mean, like, we're going to, like, hold a, you know, a staple and just go pop like that or, you know? And it's like, no, I got this little, like, gun thing and we're just going to do that. It's like, okay. All right. Okay. And he said, but here's the thing. You're going to have to hold him while I do it. You know, my wife, she's no help. She's over there crying, you know, all those other kind of things. And so, I grab my son and, you know, I just hold him. I'm like, son, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You know, it's going to be okay. And so he's calming down. And then this doctor comes by and pop right in his head. And until the day I die, I will never forget the look on my son's face because he looked up at me. And he couldn't talk, you know, really, but at that point, but the look in his eyes was, what are you letting them do to me? I trusted you. You're not supposed to let people hurt me like that. And it killed me, man. And I'm just sitting there going, son, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And I had to just keep holding him down. And the reason I had to hold him down was because I loved him. Because I knew that that had to be done or something worse would happen to him. It could get infected. The cut could begin to just, you know, get worse and worse and worse. And I knew that, but he didn't. He didn't understand it. He just knew that it hurt. But I also knew I wasn't going to leave him. I wasn't going anywhere. And I wasn't going to leave my son, especially when he hurt. Friends, listen to me. Whenever you hurt, our God hurts with you. And whenever you're in pain, you can know that he's going to do something through it. You may not recognize it immediately, but I promise you this. I promise you this. He will do something through it. He will use it. He will be with you in the midst of it. He can be trusted through all of this pain. He's not going to leave you. And it may feel like he's just holding you down and you're staring up at him going, what in the world are you letting these people do to me? And his word back to you is just this: listen, I love you. You may not understand it right now. You may not comprehend it. But I just want you to know, I know what it feels like to hurt. And I just want you to know, I'm not going anywhere. Because he's not a cold-hearted God. He's a loving God. And he's a loving God. And that's not just what he does. That's who he is. See, this morning we can walk out and just knowing this, a God who suffered for us is a God who cares for us. That's what he did. He suffered for us. And so he is a God who cares for us. He loves us. He loves us deeply. And so as we begin to face our pain, as we begin to just recognize what is going on in our pain, our challenge is simple. It's just this. Would you learn to reframe the pain? Reframe it. To begin to look at your pain through a bit of a different lens and just be able to say, hey, God, how have you used my pain before? I've seen him be faithful in the past. I learned this, or I was spared from this. My faith was deepened. I remember being questioned about this by one of my mentors, Alan Algren. We were talking one day, just talking about things that I've been experiencing and going through. And he was like, bro, you're actually going through it. This is real. You're not making it up. But then he asked me a question. He said, but here's the thing. Can I ask you, in the midst of all of this, is your prayer life better or worse than it was before? I was like, dude, I have not prayed this much my entire life. He's like, oh, okay. Is your faith deeper or is it weaker? Is it stronger now or is it weaker than what it was before? It's like, well, I think that it's deeper. The scriptures speak to me more. It's like almost every time I'm opening the Bible, it's like God is just yelling something at me. He says, okay. Reframe that pain. What did you learn? What is God doing in you? What is he doing through you? What does Christianity say about suffering? There are all kinds of theological defenses for the problem of evil. But the greatest defense of all is this, is that God chose to suffer with us. He sees your pain. He sees my pain. He provides you and I with hope now and the hope of resurrection later. So today, we don't deny suffering. I'm not going to get up here and tell you that if you're just faithful, you'll never experience suffering in your life. Suffering is real. It's real. Now, we defend Christianity by teaching that suffering existed for the most faithful person to ever walk the face of the earth. Even Jesus wasn't exempt from suffering. And I don't know why things happen the way they do sometimes. But the God of the universe doesn't look down at me and just say, hey, suck it up, buttercup. No, instead, he came down to earth to suck it up with me. That's what our God did. And we won't always get a straight answer about suffering. But we know one thing for certain. That if our God is willing to dwell in our pain with us, then he must have a good reason for allowing us to experience that pain in the first place. And so as we begin our time of communion, I'll invite you to grab your communion supplies and get those ready. This one sets up pretty well for us. We are going to fix our eyes on Jesus. To fix our eyes on the cross, his darkest moment, his greatest moment of pain and suffering, alone and abandoned, the cross. Paul David Tripp writes in his devotional New Morning Mercies about how the very worst thing that could happen, talking about the cross, was at the very same time the very best thing that could happen. And only God is able to do such a thing. Listen to him. The same God who planned that the worst thing would be the best thing is your Father. He rules over every moment in your life, and in powerful grace, he is able to do for you just what he did in redemptive history. He takes the disasters in your life and makes them tools of redemption. He takes your failure and employs it as a tool of grace. He uses the death of the fallen world to motivate you to reach out for life. The hardest things in your life become the sweetest tools of grace in His wise and loving hands. So be careful how you make sense of your life. What looks like a disaster may in fact be grace. What looks like the end may be the beginning. What looks hopeless may be God's instrument to give you real and lasting hope. Your Father is committed to taking what seems so bad and turning it into something that is very, very good. And as we take this bread, we take this to remember His body beaten and bloodied, nailed to a cross. It looked like it was a disaster, but in fact it was our grace. Remember Him. And we take His blood as it was poured out on behalf of us. And we look at what looked hopeless, and we see God's instrument to give us hope, His blood for you. Our Father, the one who can take the very worst and turn it into the very best. The one who can take what we feel like is a disaster and can turn it into the grace we need. To the one who takes what looks like the end and makes it the beginning, we offer you our hearts today. We thank you for the cross of Jesus Christ. We thank you that in that dark and disastrous moment, that in that moment of death, there was a moment of life. And we look forward, Heavenly Father, to that day whenever you will end suffering once and for all. Whenever you will return. Whenever you will set all the wrong things to right. Whenever you will make all the sads come untrue. We look forward to that day. May you be our hope. In Jesus' name.